Welcome to Conversations with Community Managers, a podcast series with actual community managers from a variety of industries. On this podcast, we peel back the hype and get into how-to discussions that uncover community and social media management best practices. Conversations with Community Managers is a co-production of Voce Communications and the Community Roundtable.
This is Doug Haslam of Voce Communications.
And Jim Storer from the Community Roundtable.
And joining us is Xuan Gui. Hi, Xuan.
Hi, Doug. Hi, Jim. Thank you very much for having me.
Absolutely.
Sure. Now, you are in the pharma industry, and we're actually talking to you not in your role in a particular company, but as a role as a community participant and, dare I say, manager in the larger pharma community. Perhaps you could explain what communities or community you're involved with.
There are a few things that I'm involved with outside the standard company process, but they all have to do with sort of healthcare and pharma and bringing those communities together. One of the communities I manage is a social network called Social Pharmer, pharmer.com. And it's really a place where anybody that's interested or involved in social media in a pharma organization or biotech organization can come together and have a conversation and chat and have a sort of community with others with that same interest or in that same field. And it all came about when a group of us were at a pharma conference talking about these issues that we had in common that were kind of unique to the pharma space. And we decided that we should have this conversation not just now, but also as a continuing engagement after the conference was over, except none of us were actually using these tools that we're talking about to get together or to have a community right. To actually have this conversation. So I started it up using the Ning platform and kind of let it grow organically. And it's taken off, and we have over 600 members now. And people all over the world are joining in the conversation. The other community that I've sort of founded recently is called Social Health. That came about because there are quite a number of tweet chats, if you want to call it that, that occur on Twitter every week as part of the healthcare spectrum. So whether it's healthcare and social media in general, or healthcare and social media for EU, or healthcare marketing, or RN chat for nurses, there's a whole bunch of them that are happening every week on Twitter talking about issues related to healthcare, unique to that particular area of healthcare. And what I was trying to do was bring these groups together so that we could have a cross conversation, not just a vertical, but a horizontal conversation with each other. And so one of the things that I founded with some of the people in these communities is an unconference called Social Health 2010. And that happened in March this year, just before South by Southwest in Austin, Texas.
It's pretty amazing all of these different events that you've put together. I mean, you think about the tweet chats, and that's obviously virtual, but some of the face-to-face. I guess the question that I'm wondering about, one of the things that we've seen is very important in community is kind of ongoing events and bringing people together. I mean, it sounds like Social Pharmer kind of grew out of an event, a face-to-face event. Can you talk a little bit about how important that is for this group and the groups that you're a part of, getting together on a regular basis and connecting?
Sure. I think the largest misconception about social media and social networks is that all we want to do is spend our time online chatting with each other on Twitter, and we forego personal face-to-face interactions because right. of that. You know, in the end, what we're finding, at least those of us that have been on here for a while, is that in fact it's quite the opposite. I think the social media space actually drives to more interaction and more need for face-to-face communication. And so as far as I've seen, a lot more interaction occurs, and a lot more of the motivation to want to meet someone comes from this social interaction that we have online. And so one of the things that is amazing about bringing a group of people together online is that you get to know each other really well and without even meeting each other. But that is what drives people to want to meet each other. And so out of that comes the opportunities to create these smaller groups. And whether it's a tweet up, a meet up, an unconference, a bar camp, whatever it may be, it's a group of people getting together that already know each other, have had this wonderful conversation online, and now they want to meet each other face-to-face so they can actually close the loop of this relationship. And that's kind of all I've created, was the opportunity to do those through both online and offline means. And I think that's what's important, is to be able to create the opportunities where smaller groups can come together offline, but then the larger group can have the conversation online as well.
We're talking about the pharma industry, the pharmaceutical industry, and the and you know the larger health and medical industry, one of the more regulated industries out there. Do you find that there is some reluctance to join social networks, especially open social networks, due to that?
Yes, for sure. I think there's a lot of reluctance, definitely from the industry end, meaning that the actual drug manufacturers, biotech organizations, there's a lot more resistance. And because there's an unknown factor to it, we're not sure how we should be engaging and what we can do that might or might not cross the boundaries of what we're regulated by. And part of that is due to the current regulations that are out there, which are mainly geared towards print and broadcast and not really towards the internet specifically. So there's a bit of an unknown factor, and that's what's, I think, keeping a lot of people from actually joining these social networks or communities online. Also, there's the responsibility to organization, if you join one of these, because we're regulated, to report things that you may see that may be affecting your job or the drug that you manufacture or product that you sell. And so there's a lot of concern around that, and people are hesitant because of that.
You talk a lot about how pharmaceutical companies and biotech companies are using social media and community. Are there real specific business processes that you see more often than not that these companies are employing social media for, like a customer support or you know product innovation and things like that?
I think right now the obvious functions where it generally falls under tends to be in the marketing space, but definitely not as traditional marketing per se. I think there's a lot more awareness as to how to use social media, mainly because the slowness to adopt these types of media. We've had the opportunity to listen and learn from the experience of others in other corporate environments, for instance, on what we should be doing. And therefore, as we start jumping into social media, I think the industry has learned that you can't just treat it like traditional forms of marketing. And so the opportunity has arisen for us to really start doing interesting things with it. And as people start adopting, whether it's Twitter or Facebook or YouTube, there are constraints to how we can use it. But it's mainly in the form of education, awareness, and to some extent marketing, but not in the traditional sense.
Do you see, you talked about, we asked about the reluctance of people possibly of joining communities. Do you see, on the other side, do you see any companies participating? I get the impression that these are communities of individuals who work within the industry, but are companies participating at all?
Definitely. For one thing, Twitter actually has become a medium where the growth of industry participants online has actually taken off pretty quickly. And right now, I think there's somewhere close to about 20 different pharma-related accounts online that I know of, where they are, you know, they span from just links to news releases all the way to really personal engagement and interaction in a way that you and I would use Twitter online. There is a lot more involvement now, especially with Twitter, but other places where you'll see pharma organizations actually creating a space or a community are places like Facebook, where they've got fan pages for people that share a certain disease to bring them together. Or even YouTube, although YouTube has been a little bit more restrictive because it is more of a broadcast medium. So it is taking off. I wouldn't say that they're completely not there, but I do think it's growing.
Xuan, I want to go back to the Social Health 2010 conference you did a couple of weeks ago. And have you share some of the best practices that came out of that? You had a great group of people down there, so I imagine they were really sharing some great lessons learned. I wonder if you could just give us the top three.
Sure. One of the big things that came out of it more than anything else is everybody echoed the sentiment that the opportunity to speak with each other across these different verticals within health was probably the greatest thing. And to keep it at a level, we had about 80, 90 people there, and to keep it at that small size so that there was enough intimacy within the group was actually really good. So if we do it again next year, which I think we are going to, we probably won't grow it much more beyond that. I think everybody enjoyed the fact that they could speak to somebody from the hospital side, from the payer or managed care side, from the medical professional side, from the pharma side. All of us were interacting in one room, and it gave us an opportunity to just talk about different areas and how it impacts healthcare overall. And of course, recently we also had health reform happen. And so those were all topics of discussion within this group of people, but all coming from different directions of healthcare. And of course, not to mention the patients were there as well. To hear what they want is important as well. So I think that was probably one of the top things that came out of there, was just the need to interact with each other and not just talk within our own vertical silos. Mm. Beyond that, I think there was also a lot of discussion around how can we gain trust, you know, with what we do, and how do we not do things that would lose the trust of the people that are invested in what we do or that we're invested in trying to save? How do we actually maintain the relationships and keep that trust mutual?
Now, as far as, you know, we've seen a lot, I think, change in the pharma industry, or a lot of change in social media in an industry like pharma getting involved. That's why we kind of asked about the reluctance because of the regulated industry. I think there's going to be some evolution here. I wonder if you agree with that and if you see any upcoming trends or changes in online communities in the next 6 to 12 months, particularly as it pertains to the pharma industry.
Sure. I think one of the things that will be very interesting is by the end of 2010, there is some indication that the FDA will be releasing some kind of draft guidance for how the industry should be able to use the internet and social media. What form that comes in, we're not really sure right now, but it certainly is one step forward compared to using the guidance that came from the past, which was focused on print and broadcast. So I think that will be a big player in terms of how it'll affect the pharma industry and what they can do going forward. The other thing is, I think there's a lot more startups, and we're calling the Health 2.0 type movement, and another thing is called participatory medicine, where patients are becoming more empowered and engaged with their own health. And all these things are all coming together now. And I think what we're seeing is tools and applications online that are facilitating the empowerment of the patient, helping them manage their own disease and helping them become the expert in their own disease, and trying to aggregate all the different types of information online in one place so that they can understand what they're going through. And I see that in the future, hopefully, where we're going is, in terms of communities, is possibly groups coming together to help understand how it's affecting everyone in an aggregated sense, because with larger numbers, you can see trends more easily. You can see what's common, what's not. You're not just fighting the disease alone. So in the future, hopefully, there's this common trend of aggregation, whether it's about just finding out what works and what doesn't, or whether it's what are the side effects that may be happening. And maybe if that gets aggregated in a national database of some kind, that could help researchers understand better how to adapt and modify things so that they can help the future of the disease.
The first part of your answer actually anticipated something I wanted to ask about government agencies. And do people in the pharma industry look to government agencies before jumping in? Do you think something, when the government agency either does something where they're actually participating or comes out with guidelines or rules or regulations, that is a direct feed into the level of participation, not just by people in pharma, but by the companies themselves?
Certainly, you know, any regulations that the FDA puts forward is something that we as an industry have to adhere to. So I think that's definitely the number one place that people look to for guidance. Also, of course, any past grievances that you've seen examples of, you definitely want to be aware of and stay away from it in order to avoid doing the wrong thing in the eyes of the government. And so I think those are examples that we follow. But besides sort of the standard FTC, SEC sort of regulations that everybody's sort of responsible for, there's also industry organizations that have set forth guidelines that some companies actually try to adhere to as best practices. So there are many places that we look to for best practices and examples. But in the end, it comes down to each individual organization understanding of the regulations and guidelines that have been put in place and how they interpret that and then execute that within their own tactics overall.
Wow, that sounds like quite a task.
It is. But it's also a very interesting space. I think the interesting thing about being in a regulated industry is it really makes you really innovative and makes you have to think about really interesting ways to do things that other people would just do the normal way.
Right.
So there's a lot of space for innovation there and a lot of opportunity to work, I think, with the government, in fact, to find good ways to do things that would be within regulation.
I want to bring this one back a little bit. We all recognize that tools are just one piece of the puzzle when you're dealing with social media and community. But I wonder if there are specific tools that you see pharma and biotech companies using more predominantly than some other tools. So are there big choices they make there?
Sure. I think I mentioned some of these before. I think definitely as in terms of platforms, and mainly because I think a lot of it is either marketing or corporate communication driven, I would say Twitter, Facebook, and YouTube are three spaces that a lot of pharma companies have ventured into. Also, you'll see some communities around disease states, but those are more closed communities. Mm-hmm. And then for the healthcare professionals, obviously there are things like CIRMO and Physician Connect and other medical professional communities, which I'd say a number of pharmaceuticals have dabbled in, but not necessarily there's no one thing that's an industry standard.
When you mentioned Twitter and Facebook and things like that, are brands using those primarily to monitor, or are they actually using them for outreach as well?
No, definitely. I think there's a lot of brands that are currently using them, and I should say companies rather than brands, because most of it's run through corporate communications. Mm-hmm. A lot of companies are using it to notify people about things that go on within the company or notices around the disease state, linking them to different maybe news releases or articles around disease states that they're invested in, things like that.
Xuan Gui joining us from the Boston area. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, guys.
And just one last reminder of where we can find you online as far as your community involvement.
Social Pharmer is the network that I set up, which is socialpharmer.com, or you can also see my blog, which is at med20.com. So it's med20.com.
Great. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Juan.
A pleasure to be here.
You've been listening to Conversations with Community Managers, a co-production of the Community Roundtable and Voce Communications. To comment on what you have heard, email doug@voceconnect.com or jim@community-roundtable.com. You can comment on our blog posts at vocenation.com or community-roundtable.com/blog. Subscribe to this series on iTunes or on either blog.